Are you also tired of one-size-fits-all weight loss plans? Meet Noom, the personalized solution that meets you where you are. Noom is able to understand your unique needs, from dietary restrictions to medical concerns. Unlike restrictive programs, Noom embraces your lifestyle and choices. Discover a sustainable approach to weight loss, tailored just for you. Honestly, Noom felt like it was made for me. It's not just about what I eat. It's about understanding why. With Noom, I've learned so much about myself and built healthier habits that stick. It's all about progress, not perfection. Say goodbye to restrictive diets and experience the Noom app for yourself with personalized lessons and expert coaching. Noom's psychology and biology-based approach has helped over 5.2 million people achieve their goals. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
Well, hello, everyone. Welcome to our YouTube live discussion of WandaVision. I am, of course, joined by the great Richard Newby of The Hollywood Reporter. Richard, thanks for joining me, my friend.
Hey, thanks for having me, man.
Yeah, usually, you know, we talk. I don't get to see your face every single time. It is glorious to not only hear your voice, but to get to see your beautiful face.
Thank you.
Really appreciate it, man.
Yeah, and my cat.
It's you and the cat. Well, that's okay, because at any point my son could come bursting in. That's the beauty of you doing this live. and thanks to everyone for tuning in who is either tuning in to YouTube Live or maybe you're listening to this on the podcast later. We've been teasing this on our main show podcast for, it feels like forever now. I've been itching to talk about WandaVision since the first episode and haven't had an opportunity. Here we are. Let's dive into this, Richard. As usual, I'll toss it to you first. Give me your general overall thoughts about the show. I'll do the same, and then we'll kind of get into the nitty gritty and all the fun, nerdy details of it.
Yeah. I love the show. I feel like, you know, we've waited so long for a new MCU project.
Yeah.
You know, especially with, I mean, it's been since Spider-Man Far From Home in 2019, which is crazy to think about, that that's how long it's been since we've had an MCU project.
Yeah, it's wild.
Yeah. So the hype was, like, already there. And particularly with WandaVision, like, these are two characters who, you know, they've been cool in all the movies they've been in, but we haven't really, like, seen them get the spotlight.
Yeah.
And I feel like they're such interesting characters. Like, just, like, as a comic reader, like, I was super excited to see what the show is going to do with them. And then also, you know, leaning on these, you know, classic sitcom references.
Yeah.
Just really, really interesting. Just, like, really unique and something different.
Yeah.
MCU and unexpected. I think that's, like, the main thing is that from week to week, you never really knew what to expect.
Yeah, I think that's what's been fun about it as well. I think you hit the nail on the head. We're talking about two characters that, you know, have certainly been a big part of, you know, that first big, you know, wave from, you know, Iron Man to Endgame. And essentially since what, Civil War, when we first saw, you know, Wanda, and then Ultron with Vision coming in, you know, but, you know, they've been kind of maybe smaller characters or smaller roles compared to you know, your Tony Starks and your Captain America. But they had done such a great job of planting the seeds with Wanda, especially, but even with Vision, with, you know, the last two Avengers films, their relationship. But this whole idea of grief, which, you know, we've seen in film and in media countless times before, but this is such a unique way to tackle it, right? Where you have this being who is willing to create her own space to deal with it or run from it, which is the great irony of the show, right? Is that she's really running from it initially through, you know, by recreating these things that don't exist outside of her bubble. And she does it through, you know, what she had known from her childhood, which is at least with America in terms of these sitcoms, and then going through the cycle of, you know, the decades. It's such a unique and interesting way to deal with it. And the show did such a great job, I think, of not only tapping into that aesthetically, and there are so many great little details in terms of callbacks to TV shows throughout the decades and whatnot. And there is fun to be had with that, but the show also never loses sight that even in the levity and even in the fun of it all, but especially as the tone shifts in the latter episodes, that it was still always about Wanda running from her grief and then eventually being forced to confront it. The show did, and that to me is why, and we'll certainly get into this, you know, the lack of fan theories and, you know, being fully realized and cameos. Like, I don't really care about it. Like, the show did what it set out to as far as exploring Wanda and her past trauma. And she has had so much of it that to focus on that exclusively was perfect, I think.
Yeah. And that's the thing. Like, she's had so much trauma in such a short period of time. And so, you know, the show, it manages to be this really moving and complex and I think honest portrait of grief. But at the same time, it's like such a wonderful tribute to the healing power of pop culture.
Yeah.
Marrying these things together. And I feel like especially, you know, after the year that we've just had, and there's been so much, so much loss, and so many people have coped with that through pop culture. I know I have, you know, I feel like, you know, even though WandaVision wasn't even intended to kick off phase four, it ended up being like the starting point.
Yeah. Yeah. Seriously. It has very much tethered to this past year very appropriately, as you know, we're all kind of dealing with loss in our own way, and some in some really heavy ways that I'm sure they can relate with, you know, in terms of Wanda's trauma. And I think what I love about that specifically, you know, with Wanda, you know, because of what we had just come off the heels of the last, you know, few years with the Avengers films, it's easy, I think, to tap into how she's felt, you know, with what happened with Ultron, or not with Ultron, excuse me, with Vision, you know, because we had just seen that very recently. But the show goes out of its way to do something I've been waiting for in terms of her dealing with Pietro's death, because she, in the movies, she never really had, and never really explored that a ton.
Yeah.
You know, like as soon as it happens, there's that great moment of her dropping to her knees and, you know, obliterating everything around her, which is an important moment. And there might have been a scene or two back at the Avengers tower or, you know, whatever that building was, you know, with Vision. It, like very subtly, or maybe a scene or two, but never in a significant way. So for her to have that time here, I thought was really great. That was, you know, one of my favorite scenes of the entire run was, what was it, episode 7, when she was going through all these flashbacks or whatever, or it might've been episode 8.
Eight, I think. Yeah.
And, you know, her as a little girl in Sokovia. Oh my God. It was great. But the moment, you know, when Vision brings up, you know, this, you know, he's like, if I'm here to comfort you, if you want to talk about this, we can, you know, because it was right off the heels of her brother's death. And, you know, to see her kind of lingering in that grief from Pietro's death, because at that point, she doesn't really know Vision in that way, right?
Right.
That was great. I love that, because we never really got that in the Avengers films. And obviously she hasn't had her own solo film. So like to get that, I thought was really great. That was, and then of course you get that. What is going to be one of the famous lines of this whole show, right? When Vision says, you know, what is grief but love, you know, love persevering, which I don't know about you, but I was bawling. I was absolutely losing it.
Yeah. It's such a great exchange. It's such a great moment. I think it like also retroactively makes Age of Ultron a stronger film. As it contextualizes that loss in a way that we hadn't seen before. And like, you know, Quicksilver being such a major character in the comics, you know, his death in Age of Ultron, I know, like, a lot of fans were pretty upset about, like, how it was handled and just kind of felt that the character was kind of just discarded. Mm-hmm. But I feel like now having WandaVision, I feel like his death is so impactful to her journey.
Absolutely. Let's use that as a springboard to talk about then this Pietro in the show and how that had maybe manipulated fan expectation a little bit. And I know that's been a talking point with some people. And it's a little bit twofold, I think, in the sense that, when you bring in Evan Peters, it's going to spark discussion. So I understand why some people might have been disappointed when it turns out that he was really nothing in the end. But, you know, which I love. But I want to get your thoughts on that, I guess, before I get into it further, how you thought the show handled Evan Peters specifically, like that whole manipulation with Pietro and obviously very purposefully what Agnes was doing as far as pulling the strings there with Pietro.
Yeah. I mean, I loved it. You know, when he first appeared, I loved it as just this kind of like meta moment. The fact that we all know that he played Quicksilver in a different Pietro in a different franchise. And, you know, I think at the time in some of the interviews with creator Jack Schaefer, she mentioned, you know, how a lot of sitcoms, especially during that era, they would recast a character and they'd come back, you know, with an entirely different act. And so that happened all the time. You know, for me, I never thought that it was actually Quicksilver from the Fox X-Men films.
Okay.
I did think that Evan Peters was somebody significant, not Ralph Boner. But I didn't think that they were, you know, introduce the X-Men that way. I thought it was just kind of like a fun Greg. But I mean, for me, like, even the fact that he wasn't, you know, a Marvel character or anybody major, it didn't bother me. I mean, that wasn't my reason for being invested in the show. You know, his existence was there to further, you know, Wanda's narrative. And especially like when going to what we know about what we learned about Agnes later, how she is, you know, testing Wanda to kind of figure out what her powers are and where they come from. I thought that the introduction of this fake Pietro was kind of a really interesting way to show that Wanda is also being experimented on in the same way that, you know, Vision is being experimented on. You know, Vision's being constructed by Sword and turned into a weapon. And that's exactly the same thing that Agnes is doing to Wanda, basically, ripping her apart. You know, Pietro is this tool to break her apart, to, you know, harness her power to make her into a weapon. And so that was what was most interesting to me about his appearance. I think that fan theories are really fun. I love writing fan theories and thinking about them and discussing them. But, like, at the end of the day, like, it's not my story. And the show, I don't think, ever promised, you know, that this was going to be a stealth, you know, X-Men pilot or Fantastic.
Exactly.
You know, I was always in it for the story of Wanda and Vision and whatever else we got.
Yeah.
You
know,
it fit in a natural way. Cool. Which I feel like it did. So, yeah, the Ralph thing, you know, I thought it was a cool aspect of Wanda's story. And I wasn't, you know, bothered at all by the reveal in the end.
Yeah, I wasn't bothered by it. I wasn't bothered by it either. And I think what's interesting, like, I do think there needs to be a distinction between fan theories and having fun with those, but then judging art for what it is.
Yeah.
And that has certainly been lost with some of the discourse, whether it be podcasts, you know, YouTube videos, or just general social media banter. Like, people have these expectations and they kind of manipulate their thoughts about the show based off of these fan theories they've created or that they've clung onto. So then when those things don't happen, they're judging it based off of false you know, expectations instead of judging it for what it is. There has to be a line drawn in the sand there. Cause I'm with you. Like, I had a lot of fun. Like, the first time we saw Pietro, I was like, is he from the X-Men universe? And is this, because we know this is going to tie into Doctor Strange 2 in some way.
Yeah.
So maybe this is opening the door, you know, and how they're going to bridge that gap a little bit, you know, or we can talk about Mephisto, like how this show seemingly alluded to him 1,000 times.
I was sure Mephisto was going to be, I wrote, you know, several pieces about, you know, I was looking at numerology and all of these different references. And that was fun. Like, that was super fun.
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
I feel like, you know, as the season starts winding down, you realize, well, that's not the direction that it's going. And like, that's okay. And like, you have to realize that it's the story that you're telling. You
know, exactly. Yeah. 100%. Like, we can have fun with that, but at the end of the day, like, we have to look at the show for what it is. Yeah. And it's, like you said, it wasn't a show about Mephisto. It wasn't trying to be a crossover event with anything else that Marvel has planned. It wasn't trying to be a setup for mutants and the X-Men and all that sort of stuff. As much as we might want that as fans, at the end of the day, this was a show about Wanda and Vision.
Yeah.
And lo and behold, at the end of the day, it was about Wanda and Vision and nothing else. Like, that's great. And the way they did it, I thought was really great. Now, it doesn't mean that Mephisto won't show up later on, because he very well may. And given, because I'm with you, like, the show was almost screaming, like, Mephisto is here somewhere. Yeah. You know, and so maybe he'll show up later. You know, or maybe we'll, you know, and obviously we're going to find out how mutants are going to be drawn into all of this. But it would have been weird, I think, for Marvel to be like, yes, we are opening the door to the X-Men and this television show that not everyone can see because of Disney Plus.
Yeah.
That would have been a weird creative choice. So, yeah, as much fun as that is, I don't think it's on the creators to limit themselves because of fan theories. You know, like you said, like with Pietro, like for him to just simply come in and, you know, kind of toying with that TV trope of, you know, an actor being cast in the middle of a run, like that has happened all the time. And that's obviously, you know, especially in hindsight, that's all that was. And the show in Agnes even says that directly, pretty much, right?
Yeah.
Where he's like, well, I couldn't get the real guy. He's, you know, halfway around the world. So I did the next best thing.
Yeah.
You know, and so, but it was handled in such a way, and obviously Evan Peters coming from, you know, playing that character previously, it does kind of, you know, it's fun as a fan to see that and how the show toys with it and does it in a way that is believable for Wanda to be like, that's not my brother, but there's something about this that feels familiar still. And obviously there's levity still, even within the show, like as they're having fun with the banter between the two of them and the style of the show and Unleash Hell, Demon Spawn, like the show is certainly having fun with it. And if that's all it's doing at the end of the day, that's fine, because ultimately by the end, when you strip away that levity, it still gets to what's rotting underneath with Wanda. And so I think the show fully realizes those tactics in some great ways for character building.
Yeah. And like, I don't think that anything is off the table. You know, as you said, it doesn't mean that Mephisto is not going to show up later. We already know that the multiverse is on the docket, you know, but I think that, you know, I think that watching these, you really have to ask yourself, like, do you want a story focused on these characters, or do you just want a commercial
for the next? Exactly.
Feel, you know, as much as Marvel, you know, is criticized for, you know, Easter eggs just serving as commercials for the next thing, sometimes barely, sometimes not. I think that WandaVision, you know, stays true to its characters throughout. Yeah. Now, you know, Wolverine, Hugh Jackman was never going to show up in the end. That wouldn't have made sense. You know, it
no, it wouldn't have made any sense at all.
It wouldn't have made any sense at all, and it would have weakened the show.
Yeah, I agree.
I think that remaining focused on characters and making you care about the characters is such a strength of the show. And, you know, I think it's also like such a strength of this format, of this television format.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
That's a little bit different from the movies, because you don't have, you know, you shouldn't have all of these, you know, crazy expectations of, you know, what's going to be the next thing. But I just feel like there's something in appreciating the narrative that's there and the characters that are there. Mm-hmm. And I wrote about this recently, just the other day for THR. I mean, WandaVision delivers a lot, you know.
Yeah. We get
Monica Rambeau and the origin of her superpowers. We get S.W.O.R.D. We get a new Vision. We get, you know, the hint that Wanda had powers before Stone. We get, you know, the Darkhold and that Scarlet Witch is not just a superhero name, but it's a title and a legacy. I mean, that's a lot of stuff. And it all fits nicely into the show. But I feel like people who, you know, say that it didn't deliver anything or didn't give them a lot, I really feel like you have to step back and look at all that WandaVision did, because it's quite a bit.
I couldn't have said it better myself. I think you articulated it perfectly. Yeah, maybe it didn't give you, you know, the fun, nerdy stuff that you wanted, but that doesn't mean it didn't deliver in giving us that stuff still. And that's why, again, for me, there has to be a distinction between, you know, theorizing and, you know, getting what you want versus what's actually there. And you have to judge it for what it is. And I agree with you. I think the show did a great job of, those smaller supporting characters, you know, or bringing in the Kat Dennings character, which was a lot of fun as well. We haven't seen her since Thor 2, I don't think.
Yeah.
But, you know, she was one of my favorite parts of those shows. You know, and then you have the FBI element, you have, you know, the Monica Rambeau stuff, as you were talking about, you know, and I thought the show handled all of that really well. And ultimately, I think what's really interesting, so you get those little tidbits, which obviously we're going to get more of that there, you know, with where the show leaves off with Monica, she's clearly going to have something to do with Nick Fury coming up soon.
Yeah.
But at the heart of it, so we get all of, you know, Wanda dealing with her grief with her brother and with Vision, and now her kids as well, which is a whole nother element I thought the show did a great job of. So when we get to those final, not just the final scene of the show, but then of course those tags at the end of the last episode leading into where she's going to be with Doctor Strange in the sequel, I think they've done a really great job of kind of leaving her in a little bit of ambiguity. Like, she's kind of faced what she created with the Hex, and boy, was that devastating.
Yeah.
When she was closing that Hex, I was, again, mess, absolute mess. But it sets the table so well with where she's going to be in Doctor Strange 2, where, and again, just theorizing, maybe she won't be the villain of that film per se, but she could end up being like some sort of anti-hero, or it could kind of play out what like Godzilla versus Kong's going to be, right? Because we know at the end of the day, no one's going to die in that movie. They're probably going to team up and
it's going to be
Batman versus Superman thing again. So like, it'll probably be some version of that, but you know, throughout that film, like, we now, the table is set for us to emotionally empathize with everything she does in that movie, even if she is quote unquote the antagonist of that story compared to Strange, you know? And so that I thought was really great, in addition to, you know, the fun details that they did provide us in terms of comic book lore.
Yeah. I think that's a really important point, is that, you know, we are asked to empathize with Wanda and not agree with, you know, her every decision.
Oh, yeah.
It's clear that her, you know, mind controlling the people of Westview is wrong.
Yeah, exactly. I love that the show addresses that.
Yeah, and I don't think that the show absolves her of that in the final episode. Like, even with Monica Rambeau, you know, I think that moment is important because she's sharing that she empathizes with her through grief, right? They have this shared grief, which has been part of Monica's journey throughout this whole show. But she also doesn't tell Wanda that she was right. She says she understands why she did it, but it doesn't right. And then you pieces of those townspeople and how they look at Wanda and how they fear her, and then leaves. You know, and I think that's really important too, because I think that it shows the damage that grief can cause to others.
And not just herself. Absolutely.
You know, Wanda's journey is one that's still continuing. You know, it's not I think that too often we look at these superhero characters and we think because they're superheroes that they need to exist as some, you know, moral paragon, right, of our classic idea of the superheroes in the 1930s and 40s, but they're not that. They're actual, you know, people who struggle. And I feel like WandaVision really hammers that point home, is that, you know, Wanda is a very flawed character and we empathize with her, we understand her because of those flaws. She's very much human. Yeah. And, you know, I think that, you know, where we leave her in the end, as you said, like, it's not, you know, it's not to say that she's necessarily going to be a good guy or, you know, a bad guy either. It's a different world than that. The stakes are different.
Yeah, there is a gray area that I think the MCU has handled with great diligence when it comes to Wanda, because we do empathize with her that she's lost her brother. She's lost the person that she loves romantically. Of course, she's going to be hurting, but she has these powers where she can somewhat recreate that. But by doing so, she's hurting others in the process. And I do love that the show addresses that, and, you know, all the way from the very beginning, right, where, you know, you get the scene between her and Dottie, right, where, like, kind of Dottie, like, cuts herself, and you see it in the performance too, where it's like there's something going on here. Or there's the moment, I forget the character's name, where Vision kind of unleashes him for a moment. He's like, you got to tell her to stop doing this, like, she's like haunting our dreams. And then you get that scene in the finale where Agnes cuts the strings of everybody, and they're like, well, one character says, like, just let us die. Like, that's how bad it is. Yeah. And at one point, Agnes, and I think what I love about that specifically as it relates to Agnes, is that you do kind of have this Thanos effect, where I feel like Infinity War did such a brilliant job of laying the foundation regarding him psychologically. Like, we may not agree with the means to an end, but you kind of understand where he's coming from. There is a tinge of poignancy. Like, he's hurting himself, and he just has a solution. We just don't agree with it, but you understand it. I kind of sense that with Agnes as well, because there's that line she says at the end where she's like, you're cruel, Rhonda. Like, what you're doing to these people, it's cruel. And it's like, Catherine Hahn is incredible in this show.
She's fantastic.
So funny. That moment, though, flipping that coin dramatically, I think she nails that line too, giving credence to the idea that from Agnes's perspective, she understands the pain of these townspeople. And Wanda is completely blind to it, has no idea. And so, you know, I think the last thing she says to Monica is like, I'm going to learn to control these powers, kind of a thing, you know. But something you said earlier is, you know, like, grief is still an ongoing process. Like, she's still, like, not only does she have the grief from before the hex, but now given everything that's happened inside of it, now with her kid, like, that's not going to be something, she's not going to walk away from that going, well, everything's fine now, I can't wait to fight with the Avengers again. Like, no. And now she has this chaos magic that she's learning to control. Like, okay, that's only going to make her more dangerous. And it's because of the murky gray area that the MCU has put her in that's really made that so compelling, I think.
And, you know, I think going back to that eighth episode again, the flashback episode, I think one of the important things to take away from that as well is, you know, in Age of Ultron, you don't really know how young Wanda and Pietro are when their parents die. Yeah. And so, you know, seeing that and the fact that they went, you know, and joined with Hydra very shortly after that. I mean, Wanda was raised by Hydra longer than she was her parents. And yeah, so
good point.
If you think about the fact that, you know, she's being raised by an organization that believes in making the world better, you know, at the expense of other people, you know, it's not surprising some of the decisions that she makes. I think that, you know, a lot of what she does, you know, existing in that gray area very much comes from that upbringing. You know, she does, you know, value the lessons of the Avengers. And I do think that she, you know, is altruistic at heart, but there's also like no denying the fact that, you know, she is a child of Hydra essentially. And so those lessons are, you know, still very much a part of her. And so I think where we leave her at the end, I think that we should feel a little bit uneasy, you know, even though we understand and we empathize and we feel we share that grief with her. I do think that we're supposed to feel a bit of unease about where she might go next.
Well, let's talk about that a little bit. I do want to hear you theorize a little bit. I kind of briefly mentioned a little bit what I think might happen with her and Doctor Strange, but in that, and maybe even going forward, I'm curious, like given going off the heels of what we just witnessed in WandaVision, where do you think that character is going to go next?
I definitely think that, you know, her quest to find her kids again is going to open up the multiverse and create some issues.
And let me just pause you there for a second. Any parent on the planet will understand that for sure, right? Yeah. I would absolutely destroy anything to find my kids. Just that alone is like, okay, I think I'm on Wanda's side here.
Yeah, I tear open holes across the universe. exactly. So I definitely think that, you know, we're going to learn a bit more about the Darkhold, you know, about where her children are. But I also think that, you know, there's something interesting, a thread left from the previous Doctor Strange movie, which is Mordo. And this idea that, you know, too many people have magic. And so, you know, I'm kind of curious about him perhaps, you know, maybe searching for Wanda to take this power away from her, you know, and Strange, you know, trying to protect her, but also, you know, trying to bring her back to help her realize that what she's doing is wrong. So I think that we're going to have some really interesting explorations of magic and morality in this next Doctor Strange film.
Yeah, I cannot wait to see where that goes. Do you think then, like, you know, obviously it's called the Multiverse of Madness, so I think we can assume that her going to find her kid, she's going to tear holes in the space-time continuum, and that's how we get, you know, Logan. that's when Hugh Jackman shows up.
Yeah, I think it'll be interesting to see, you know, especially with what we're hearing about the Spider-Man film.
And that too, yeah.
And yeah, I think it's interesting.
And so they hire Sam Raimi to do this Doctor Strange movie, right? But also maybe co-direct Spider-Man 3 with his boy. rumored to be in that one. I guess not confirmed, but.
Yeah, I honestly think that, you know, most of the multiverse stuff, we're probably going to get a tease at the end of this third Spider-Man movie. Yeah. I think it's going to be the main thrust of the film. But I'm very much interested to see kind of who they bring over, which characters are introduced. We already know the character America Chavez is going to be in this next Doctor Strange film. So in the comics, she's a character from another universe. You know, so she's coming in. And there are rumors about, you know, Chris Evans, you know, maybe having signed a deal to reprise his role. So some people are thinking that, you know, Hydra Cap. Woody. So I'm very much interested to see, you know, not only get some characters from, you know, previous non-Marvel Studios franchises, but also familiar faces that are kind of recast in different ways.
Yeah, that'll be fun. I can't wait to see where all that goes. I know earlier on our main show, I forget what episode number it was, but back in January, we did our most anticipated films of the year. And I had Spider-Man 3 on that list purely because of that reason. And this was before I knew anything about WandaVision, where Doctor Strange was going to go. But I guess you can kind of lump all of that into that same hype for me. You know, and I think maybe that's what's most compelling about WandaVision to me, is that before that show started and ran, like Wanda, in terms of like, if I had to rank the Avengers, would probably like her and Vision would be like middle of the pack for me, maybe. Mm-hmm. Not, and I don't have anything against them, but again, we've seen Cap and Iron Man and Thor, who's, you know, Chris Hemsworth absolutely has slayed that character. In fact, Thor might be like Chris Hemsworth's Thor might be my favorite of all of the Avengers. So like his performance, especially in the last two Avengers films, but even, you know, his own films as well, he's just been so good.
Yeah.
You know, and we just haven't seen as much from Wanda and Vision, you know, but this show has remedied that to the point where Wanda, maybe she's taken the mantle from Chris Hemsworth. Like, I've come to love this character so much that I, all of a sudden, Doctor Strange 2, which was barely on my radar, is like, can I please see this movie tomorrow now? Like, yeah. I'm dying to see it. You know, Sam Raimi coming back, for one. Let's talk about that for a second. We haven't seen this cat since 2013, right?
Yeah.
And I love Sam Raimi. I don't know how you feel about
him. I did too. Oh, yeah. He's one of my favorites. Yeah.
Yeah. Love him. You know, and he's done some TV stuff. But in terms of film, we haven't seen him since 2013. It's been so long. So for him to come back and to come back to the world of superheroes is very exciting. I mean, yeah. I'm on record of Spider-Man 2 being the best superhero movie I've ever seen.
It's up there.
I love
it's
it.
It's in my top 10.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely love it. So for him to come back is exciting. The world of Doctor Strange, I think, is right up his alley in terms of his sensibilities as a filmmaker.
Yeah.
And especially now, given what we've seen with Wanda, I think he can do some really interesting things with her. So all of a sudden, like these characters, the property of Doctor Strange that was lesser on my radar is skyrocketed just because of this show and what they've done with Wanda. They've transformed her very literally, but even figuratively in my mind, as one of the best characters in the MCU right now.
I agree. I'm honestly like a little more excited to see Wanda and Doctor Strange and Doctor Strange himself.
Exactly. Yeah.
100%. I'm so invested in where her story is going.
Yeah.
Even after that, like I hope that, you know, the character's around for a really long time. You know, maybe there's a Scarlet Witch series or a movie in the future. You know, not only because there's such an interesting mythology that's been introduced now in terms of the world of magic, but I mean, Elizabeth's performance is just incredible.
Let's talk about that. Let's talk about that. Oh my God.
Yeah, like that. The way she can turn an emotion just like on a dime. I mean,
incredible.
I've always like appreciated her, you know, as an actress, even outside of the MCU, with some of the other films she's done, like Ingrid Goes West and Godzilla and Marlene. You know, I've always thought she was a talented actress, but I mean, she blew me away in this. Just the sheer range, the ability to, you know, capture the essence of wives and these sitcoms from every era, but then also Wanda herself and her vast range of emotions, her role as a mother, as someone who is terrifying and both terrified. It's incredible.
I say this with every ounce of energy in my soul. Give her awards for her performance in this show. She is so good. She is so good. And I know so many people talk about her performance in terms of film anyway, her performance in Martha, Marcy, May, Marlene. And she truly is great in that film. And I know it's some people will, especially like hardcore cinephiles, may revolt against this, but this truly could be her best performance today. And I say that in all seriousness.
Yeah.
For the reasons you just stated there, like the way she can switch from, you know, levity to drama, to emotion, to even being intimidating, right? Like I'm thinking of that moment when she first kicks out Monica Rambeau. Like,
oh yeah.
Moments before, Monica is telling her this story on the couch about getting this raise or trying to get this job.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And this animal is like ducking around the couch and she's like trying to hide it. Right. And it's this goofy moment of fun. And then the next moment she notices something on Monica and all of a sudden she starts to flip, right? Where emotionally she's become triggered. And you see that in Olsen's face. And then once she starts to question Monica and Monica's like, you know, she doesn't have the right answers, then all of a sudden it goes from emotion to intimidating. Like Monica scared for her life and she should be. I mean, it is so powerful, like how she's able to do that on a dime like that. It is absolutely remarkable. The nuances and the texture in her performance, you know, or, you know, I'm thinking of like, just emotionally speaking, that incredible monologue she has to Vision in the final episode about being my sadness and my hope, but most important, you're my love. Yeah. Like on paper, that can maybe come off tacky, but it's anything, but she gives it such credence in her performance. Yeah. That it is powerful more than anything else. It is so, so good. Her performance is genuinely breathtaking. And I know, you know, when it comes to superhero films or shows, like these prestigious award shows hate to kind of, you know, dabble out the nominations and awards, but they truly should consider it because she is that good. I know the Mandolin has gotten a couple of things. I know the Globes have at least nominated it. So who knows? Maybe it will down the road.
I hope so. It's so deserving. I mean, Elizabeth Olsen, Paul Bettany, Catherine Hahn, I say
they're all great.
Yeah, put all of them up for Emmys and Golden Globe.
Seriously. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, from the first episode, I was like, can we please get a Catherine Hahn spinoff? Like, she was so funny. Absolutely funny. I love that she's become memeified. Like her performance in the show, because it's so, I hate, like, it's so clownish, but in a great way. Like, just some of the things she does in those early episodes had me on the floor rolling. Yeah. I was laughing so hard.
I feel like she has this great understanding of camp, and I feel it's something that we like haven't really seen in the MCU, and so it's such like a welcome presence. Like, she doesn't feel like any other character. And I feel like that's like one of the things that makes her so fascinating. I just want to like see her show up. Like, I want to see her in a Doctor Strange sequel.
Yeah.
I want to see her in Blade, like with the scene with Mahershala Ali. Like, she's just such like a quirky, like unique presence that really like keeps you like off balance.
Yeah.
I love that quality.
There's maybe the one that stands out to me, I have no idea why, but I say this all the time and it drives my wife crazy. But there's that moment where Agnes is, you know, where the twins were just born and they're in their crib and she's kind of rocking them to kind of calm them down. And she says, "There's no containing this tiger." She shakes her butt back and forth. I don't know why. It was so funny. So I say it all the time to my wife and she just, like, get away from me. This is too much. I just love it. Like, she's so good. But even in the latter two episodes, when things change for the character, I think she does the drama very well at the same time. And they've definitely left the door open for that character to come back. So I'm very excited to see how or when, you know, that goes down.
Yeah, for sure. And she's a major, Agatha Harkness is a major presence in the comics. But, you know, that's another thing of just like thinking about appreciating what WandaVision does. It's just like, I mean, you know, growing up reading comics in the 90s, I never thought that we'd see Scarlet Witch and Vision, you know, green.
Yeah.
The possibility of seeing like the Avengers all together was a pipe dream. You know, they're all at separate studios. But like the fact that we have a show starring Wanda and Vision and Agatha Harkness, and by the end of Scarlet Witch and Agatha Harkness are like fighting, you know, with magic. That's insane. And I'm so appreciative of that fact. Like for me, that beats any, you know, cameo appearance by X-Men or Reed Richards or anything. Like that it's so on point, it's so perfect. Great, yeah.
Yeah, and how they channel grief and through these characters, it's just so very clever. Again, the ideas of grief have been examined many a times in movies and TV shows, but never like this. It's really great. And even to that point, like the way we see it kind of, you know, manifested through those three characters and kind of the strings that's been pulled from or that Agnes is pulling herself to kind of manipulate some of these situations. It's, I think what's really interesting is that, and again, I agree with you. I love that the show was never about cameos. It was never about being a crossover event with something else. The one cameo we do get, the show was like, not really that much. It's not that big a deal. Come on. It's not that big. It's for fun. You know, but even in terms of the conventional MCU action we typically get, even in the middle of that, it was still focused on character and action. Like we don't get a ton of action in this anyway, which I appreciate in so many ways. This is a nice reprieve to something like Endgame, right? Which was chock full and rightfully so, given where that story had gone. It's small, it's contained very literally inside a hex. And I love that even the little action we get, there's purpose to it and it drives characterization, you know, and I think that's what's so great about that final battle between Agnes and Wanda, right? Where, there's some sparkles going back and forth and there's some energy to it. But at the end of it, it's really about, you know, Wanda pulling a trick that Agnes first pulled on her and, you know, and then tying it all to her grief and then her eventually closing the hex and all that. So like, you know, even when it becomes the most Marvel, the show still kind of pulls the reins a little bit to be like, actually it's still about this one thing that we care about. And I love that. I mean, even with Vision, right? Like, let's start off a little action on action with Vision versus Vision, only to then end it in the most Vision way possible that is anticlimactic, but still absolutely captivating. philosophical discussion. Oh, I love it.
The Theseus discussion is probably now one of my favorite.
It's so good.
Moments. And I love how, you know, it focuses on the emotion and the drama. I mean, you do get some superhero action, but I mean, at the same time, you know, this is based on a comic book property. Like, you're not going to find something that's entirely divorced from, you know, Marvel and comics, because that's what it is. But I think that it manages to, you know, put that in there, but also elevate the material around it and give it a reason for existing.
Absolutely. Now, I completely agree. There's a great marriage of having the comic book lore there and everything that comes with having the superpowers, but it also being about the human element of these characters, or in the case of Vision, kind of grappling with the idea of him not being human, you know, but still being a part of this world and what that means for him, which is interesting in a couple of ways, because there's the relationship itself that he has with Wanda, but then there's the whole idea that he was created from Wanda herself, right? So like he has no memory or recollection of anything that happened pre the hex. So there's all of that that he's grappling with while trying to understand that, you know, what is Wanda up to? Like something's kind of weird and off here. And then how that taps into him as a character, his humanity, if you will, I think is just so absolutely freaking great. As we wind down here, though, I do want to kind of switch gears here once again and pick your fan theory brain a little bit, because the one thing that, and again, I can drop all other fan theories aside, like again, fun. And the show didn't go into any of them. That's perfectly fine. And none of them bother me. The one I'm curious about, though, again, not disappointed, but curious about, and we briefly talked about it earlier, is Mephisto, because he's coming to the MCU, right? He has to be.
He definitely has to be. I feel like, okay, so you watch that Loki trailer that came out after the Disney's Investors Day. Yeah. There is a stained glass window the two characters are in front of. I believe one of the characters is Owen Wilson. There's a stained glass window, and in that stained glass window is the face of the devil. And I really think that it's Mephisto.
Yeah.
I have a feeling that he's coming. You know, especially with the Darkhold being introduced, her children gone, you know, there's a classic, the classic storyline is, you know, Wanda's children, their souls actually are with Mephisto. Yeah. He claims, which, you know, kicks off a long run of her grief culminating in House of M, the iconic No More Mutants. I just have a sense that, you know, Mephisto is going to be showing up sooner rather than later. I feel like he's too compelling a villain, and, you know, he has so many ties to a lot of the characters that are coming, you know, in Phase 4, not only, you know, Wanda, but Doctor Strange, Blade, Fantastic Four, Silver Surfer, if we eventually get him. I mean, he's made the rounds. And so I feel like there's definitely something in the works.
Yeah.
And I feel like there's a significance to the that we saw in WandaVision, some of the hex language.
Yeah.
Even the demon spawn quote, that fake PH. Yeah. I definitely feel like he's being teed up. So I would just say that I think that patience will be rewarded on that one.
The devil's in the details, babe.
Yeah.
Like it was there the whole time.
Yeah.
You know, it's, again, I in hindsight, I'm actually glad that he didn't show up, because the TV show, rightfully, I think, did a great job of never being distracted by any of that, and it just being about WandaVision, as we talked about. But it did lay or plant a ton of seeds that Mephisto is coming. And you're right. I mean, in the comics, there's the Wanda element, but there's Doctor Strange, and you're talking about Fantastic Four. And we know those things are coming, right? We're going to get more of Doctor Strange now that Tony Stark is out of the picture and Cap is out of the picture. Strange, we would assume, is going to be a bigger component now. As well as Wanda.
And there's the fact that Spider-Man doesn't have his secret identity anymore. And in the comics, deal with Mephisto to, you know, regain that secret identity.
There you go. It's all there. Like they have surely been planting the seeds, and given where, you know, what they're going to be introducing in this next phase, it just makes a ton of sense. You know, the House of M stuff is interesting, though, because obviously we don't have mutants yet for her to destroy. So I'm curious where, you know, how that'll fit into all this, but they've certainly they have more or less said without saying, yeah, Mephisto's coming. Like he's coming. Just wait. He planted the seeds, but he's coming. And if that's the case, then that's fine. We'll certainly look back at WandaVision and, you know, with certainly less criticism, or at least others. I have no criticism of it, but yeah. I think they've done a great job of planting those seeds for, so when he does come, it'll be like, okay, you know, we kind of saw this coming already. Which I'm excited for. I'm excited to see kind of how all of that unfolds with these new characters and even with Wanda and Doctor Strange, who will get more screen time, if you will. Because what even with Strange, we only had the one movie and then the two Avengers films, right?
Yeah.
And he was obviously a supporting role in those Avengers films. So
yeah. And also mentioned that Mephisto in the comics, he also has Dr. Doom's mom's soul.
Okay.
Dr. Doom, you know, partners up with Dr. Strange in this pretty epic.
Wow. Yeah, that sounds exciting.
Journey to hell to reclaim his mom's soul.
Yeah, I can't wait. Yeah, I see. Let's do all that. Let's bring it all in. I'm very excited. I'm certainly here for it. Well, thanks, Richard, for joining me. This was a ton of fun. I guess real fast, any final thoughts on WandaVision, what you thought of it, anything that we might have missed in this conversation?
I love the show. I also just want to say that I was really impressed with Matt Shakman's direction, you know, channel all of those different eras of television and also, you know, create something that fits within the comic book world. You know, I wasn't familiar with any of his television work before, but he really impressed me, and I definitely think that he's earned another Marvel project in the future.
Yeah, now I'm with you. I wasn't very familiar with his work at all either, but man, I walked away very impressed. I mean, the aesthetics of the TV shows, and again, it's the intricate details that they go into as well. Is just it's really really impressive, and I just love the intuitiveness of it all in terms of not only having those things as a fun element, but then it plays into the whole thing thematically, you know, as we've been talking about. So it's everything in the show has purpose to it, you know, whether it be in the aesthetics, whether it be with the action, how they use, when they use the superpowers. I mean, even that element is interesting, right? Because like Wanda and Vision are very intentional about hiding their powers. You know, they get that whole magic show where, you know, with drunk Vision, which was hilarious, you know, but you know, they're doing it in a way that works in the context of a magic show, you know, so they can get away with it. And then eventually like Wanda's like, you know what, why are we even hiding this? You know, let's just throw it out there. And Vision's like, I don't know about that. So like, it just, you know, it felt like everything had, you know, a purpose to it, which, you know, was, you know, is really great. Absolutely wonderful. The performances, as we've talked about, is great. I mean, I've come to really like it a lot. I'm very excited to see what Marvel does next in terms of these TV shows and how they further these characters, you know, cause Falcon and Winter Soldier is coming around the corner. And in many ways, I think I'm the same boat as Wanda and Vision in that they've had some fun screen time, but they've never had, you know, they've never had the role in the MCU so far. And now they're going to be front and center in an interesting way. You know, my only thing with that, and we'll reconvene once that show wraps, Richard, you know, because I'm on record of Captain America Civil War being maybe my favorite film of the MCU. I absolutely love it. And a lot of it comes back to Baron Zemo and the characterization of him in that show, which in some ways is actually kind of similar to what we've just seen with Wanda in terms of the tragedy of his backstory, the fact that he's nothing more than a Jason Bourne. You know, because I feel like if we saw that film from his perspective, it's a Jason Bourne movie.
Yeah.
And you know, we're rooting for him in a very similar way where the people killed his family, or John Wick, if you will, you know, these people killed his family and he's out to kind of get vengeance. And he does it in a clever way where he knows he can't compete with Iron Man. And yeah. So he sets the Avengers against themselves, and it's, you know, and so it sets this idea that guilt becomes the main villain of that movie and not Baron Zemo. Mm. So with that show, I'm a little bit nervous that they're going to turn him into a conventional villain, and I don't know how I feel about that, but I'm going to go in open-minded. We'll see how it goes. But that is to say, WandaVision, great. thanks, Richard, for joining us. So we mentioned earlier, we can find your work at The Hollywood Reporter. Where can we find you on social media as well, my friend?
I am on Twitter at Richard L. Newby. Always happy to chat about this comic book stuff.
Yeah, definitely go and hit up Richard. Not only talking about it on social media, great follow there, but even, you know, the stuff that he writes is, it's excellent, excellent stuff. So I urge people to go and check that out. So as far as In Session Film stuff, real fast. So our latest episode dropped yesterday as of the day we are taping this. And we talked about Raya and the Last Dragon, but... You know, which was a fun conversation. We actually had Kevin Lee on from Busting the Block. It was a really good conversation. I urge people to go and check that out. But Brendan and I, continuing our Terrence Malick movie series, we talked about The Thin Red Line. And it is one of those reviews. It might be the review I'm the most proud of that we've done in maybe years. It was such a fun conversation. We really get into the nuances of that film, and I hope people go and check it out and enjoy it, because, man, I had a great time talking about that. So go and check that out. I know Ryan and Jay have some fun things coming up on Extra Film this week as well, so be sure to be on the lookout for that. Richard, thanks again, my friend. Thanks for watching, listening, everybody, however you're consuming this. Really do appreciate it. We'll see you all next time on the In Session Film podcast / now YouTube Live. Have a good night, everybody. Yeah.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do. Start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia, movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.